Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's all turning rotten for the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn as the reality of what is happening around them actually sinks in. After a humiliating day in the House of Commons, opposition MPs turned on Corbyn last night, accusing him of incompetence and misjudgments during the election campaign. It's hard to see him lasting another 3 months in the job, isn't it? Meanwhile, the battle to replace him goes on, and Keir Starmer, the token man in the race, has given an interview to The Guardian this morning, warning against a lurch to the right. His words, not mine. Surely the first thing they have to do is form some kind of Brexit policy that actually makes sense. Remain or leave, or some kind of competition in which they say this is the terms under which we would like the bill to be set out. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be finding out just why illegal immigrants are still crossing the channel by the hundreds, despite millions of pounds being handed over to the French to stop it by the Home Office. And we'll be asking why calling people nerds and geeks could soon be a hate crime. 0344 499 1000. Plus, we'll investigate just how Whirlpool got it so wrong with their flammable washing machines. After all, they only had one job: make a washing machine that doesn't spontaneously combust. I mean, how hard could that be? 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest great radio station in the world. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The front page of The Guardian this morning has got an interview with Keir Starmer, an exclusive interview indeed is what it says, and it says, we must put an end to damaging Labour infighting, and certainly by the sounds of it, last night there was an awful lot of damaging infighting going on at a meeting at which Jeremy Corbyn was lambasted for being incompetent and for getting it all wrong during the election campaign. We're going to speak to Chris Bright very shortly, Labour MP for Rhondda, but before we do that, let's have a listen to the contrasting sounds from the House of Commons yesterday. First up, the new Speaker of the House, of course, introduces the Prime Minister.
Yeah. That's my commitment to the House. Prime Minister!
Yeah. Mr. Speaker-elect, I'm sure the whole House will...
And now, Jeremy Corbyn.
Can I call the Leader of the Opposition, right on Jeremy Corbyn?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I join the Prime Minister in remembering the horror of what happened on London Bridge?
It's a pretty shocking moment, I'm afraid, for Jeremy Corbyn, because not only was there a very lacklustre response to him taking to the dispatch box, but that then there was a sort of mockery from the opposition benches. Let's talk to Chris Bright and see what he's making of it all. Chris, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Congratulations, first of all, for getting back in, because many of your colleagues didn't quite make that. But it's not going terribly well, is it?
Well, more to the point, it didn't go very well last week. Yeah, I'm thoroughly aware of that. Thanks.
No, I don't mean it didn't go very well last week. I mean, it's not going very well now either.
Well, it's kind of inevitable that when you have a massive, catastrophic fourth defeat in a row, that, you know, it's going to be pretty bruising and bloody.
Yes.
Fairly inevitable, I think. And You know, sometimes I kind of wish we could all go away and do all of this in a quiet space without everybody watching us, but that's the nature of politics.
Unfortunately, that's not the way it works, is it? And unfortunately, nope. As well, there's an awful lot of MPs, and I don't know whether you're going to join them, who are now saying that Jeremy Corbyn got it all wrong. He should never have done this. He should never have done that. Obviously, you know, it would have been good if they'd maybe said that before now.
Well, it's always a difficult balancing act, isn't it? Because, you know, look, I mean, every second door in the Rhondda, voters who've always voted Labour forever were telling me, sometimes with tears in their eyes, that they couldn't vote Labour this time because of Jeremy Corbyn. And that was, sometimes it was Jeremy Corbyn stroke Brexit. It was a kind of combination of the two. But you know, that was a repeated thing. Now, you could have a go at me for not saying that endlessly for the last 2 years, but I couldn't see what practical purpose that was going to serve because Jeremy was the leader of the Labour Party.
Yeah, but Chris, you've always been pretty true to your cause. You know, you and I have had many disagreements and arguments about stuff, but you've always said that you would prefer to remain in the European Union. He wasn't able to say that, and I think because of that position of fence-sitting, that it did great damage to an awful lot of candidates because people were confused about what your position was.
I think that was true in the referendum, actually, as well. In 2016, I think Jeremy's position wasn't very clear. I think it's 2/3 of Labour voters didn't know what Labour's position was in the referendum. Mm. And maybe if we'd been a bit more urgent in our campaigning then, we might have had a different set of outcomes and so on. But look, you know, this is all crying over spilled milk in a way. What we've got to learn the lessons from what happened last week. And I think those who say it's all about Jeremy is slightly sort of missing the point, because the thing is, we lost 4 general elections in a row. Yep. Now, we have done that before. That was 79, 83, 87, 92. But we started the work after the 1983 election, and it was still another 14 years that we were in opposition.
Yes.
I remember I was Frank Dobson. I went to Frank Dobson's funeral earlier this week, and excuse me, and I was Frank Dobson's agent in 1992, and I remember sitting in the car with him at 4 o'clock in the morning, and both of us in floods of tears, because Frank was the shadow energy minister who we expected to go into government as energy minister, and we would have introduced a scheme for compensating people who'd had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease in the mines. Ironically, you know, 10 years later, I was MP for the Rhondda, and we were only then being able to compensate former miners. And many had died in the interim. So, it is a painful thing when you lose, and the things that you'd wanted to do, you're not able to do. It's not really about the party. It's more about what you're not able to do.
Yeah. But also, when you were up against Margaret Thatcher, you were up against a sort of a force of nature and a political ideology, whereas you've been up against the likes of David Cameron and Theresa May, which is by no means anything like as formidable. And the cure for what happened back in the sort of 70s and 80s, late 70s, early 80s, was to turn the party into a party of the centre and New Labour. And that's why Tony Blair got elected in 1997, because he appeared to be a moderate individual. So Keir Starmer this morning saying, we don't want to lurch to the right, seems to me to be the worst thing he could have ever said.
I'm not convinced about the left-right sort of equation. I think it's more about credible, incredible. Because there were lots of things, for instance, in the manifesto, both in 2017 and 2019, which I think a lot of voters liked, like, you know, nationalising the railways. I think lots of people think that they should be in public hands.
Well, I'm actually one of those people, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So I think polling shows that has something like 80% support around the country. But the problem was that in our manifesto this time, it was like we were going to nationalise everything.
Yes, I know. And when you started to look at what the actual...
It started to feel incredible.
Yeah, when you started to look at the detail of what was going to change in the economy and in industry, it looked as though we were suddenly going to be looking at a completely different way of life, a very, very different economy, and in a very, very different sort of world, basically, that it was all going to be suddenly very, very left-wing socialism, which a lot of people don't like.
Well, I was with you until the last kind of bit of the sentence, because I think there are an awful lot of people certainly in my constituency in Rhondda, which has some of the, you know, biggest problems of any constituency, not only in the UK, but in Europe as well. And incidentally received an awful lot of money from the European Union. But let's leave that to one side for the moment. I mean, there are a lot of my constituents would say, yes, I do want a completely different way of running the economy. I'm not sure that necessarily means that they want BT nationalised, but they certainly want to see radical change in the country, because You know, we have gross levels of inequality and people living in conditions which I don't think any of us would want to. And more importantly, the most depressing thing for me is people who are in work still not having enough money at the end of the week to be able to put food on the table.
Yeah, and there are lots of ways of curing that without necessarily nationalising everything and being anti-business.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
But here's an interesting...
My point is that I'm not sure it's about a left-right issue, or left-right centre, whatever. I think that's a slightly old-fashioned way of looking at it.
It may well be.
It's much more about people's forming their sense of identity, and somehow or other, we just didn't manage to chime with that, either in 2010 or 15 or 17 or 19.
Right.
So it's not just about in the manifesto and whether it was incredible, though I think to many people... somebody in the PLP last night said that it was like we were in a we'd been locked in the sweet shop and didn't know where to start.
Yes, but also it's been deliberately moved to the left. I mean, you say it's not about left right, and you may well be correct about that. However, since the days of Miliband taking over, he said because he wasn't left wing enough, so it went more left wing, and it's actually got worse. So you can only conclude, surely, that the more left wing you are, the worse the result is, because I'm reading a piece this morning written by the guy who lost up in Houghton and Sunderland South, the Tory MP, who's basically saying that if it wasn't for the Brexit Party, Labour would have actually been reduced to 168 seats rather than the 202 they've got today. So it could have actually been a lot worse. And surely, knowing what you know about the new Labour experience, you know, you win elections by being more in the centre.
Well, I think you win elections by being credible. The art of politics politics is the art of the possible.
Yeah.
And I think we were offering the sky, and some people thought, well, that's very nice. I like the sky, but I'm not sure that it's yours to offer. But by converse, in 1997, when we won the 1997 election, we were so cautious that, you know, for the first 2 years, we weren't going to do anything about Tory spending plans, which meant that it was terribly difficult to do anything about the NHS in those first 2 years.
Right.
So sometimes it's about caution and ambition. Sometimes it's about the individual, the personnel involved. I think also one of the things that played into this is, we the Labour Party, made a strategic error in voting for this general election at this time, before Brexit was in any sense sorted. We had the government on the ropes in terms of the numbers in the House of Commons. We could have pursued our own policy quite effectively. The government didn't have the numbers, and I have no idea why we went forward with the election. Similarly, people like myself, who stormed out of the shadow cabinet in 2016, I think we made a strategic error as well then, because we just gave the impression that it was the parliamentary Labour Party versus the membership. And that looks like an utterly divided party.
Well, it does, because you've got a sort of momentum-controlled party, effectively, and a very different makeup in Westminster. I don't know if you were at this meeting last night of the Parliamentary Labour Party.
I was.
Can you tell us what the sort of atmosphere was like? Was it acrimonious? Was it horrible? Was it just the business of politics?
I've known much more acrimonious, actually. I thought it was... people were direct. That's certainly true. But there wasn't a lot of name-calling or anything like that.
Okay.
And people from different perspectives were able to put them across. I mean, the thing that really struck me was that we all fitted in the room.
Yes. That's,
and if there had been 60 more of us, we wouldn't.
That's right. And so what is the general consensus about what you do now then? I mean, do you have a big fight about which way the Labour Party now goes? Do you have a big fight about who you now want to be the leader? Does it have to be a woman? Does it have to be two women? I mean, what's happening?
Well, I think a lot of people are considering whether they should stand for this, that and the other. I'm wondering whether I should stand for deputy leader.
Okay. Would you be deputy leader to?
Whoever is elected as the leader. I would step aside from...
That's very diplomatic.
It's a genuine position, which is that, to be honest, I think anybody who's going to be the next deputy leader has got to be able to say, you will never hear of any disagreement between me and the leader in public, because the role of the deputy leader is to organise, and fundraise.
Right. And what about the position that you're going to have to adopt on Europe? Because presumably you're going to have a position, whether it is, I'm told, Jeremy Corbyn has said that you're all going to be whipped to vote against the withdrawal bill on Friday, which seems a bit sort of after the Lord Mayor's show, to be honest, because it doesn't really matter. But is there going to be any kind of formulated proper policy about your position on Europe?
Well, there will have to be. You're quite right. And, I mean, as you know, we've had this discussion before. I was a Remainer. I remain a Remainer, and I will remain a Remainer until my dying day. But I fully accept that we have effectively had a second referendum now. Brexit is going to happen, and I guess it will happen at the end of January unless there's some kind of slip in the way the government organises stuff. I think we should do proper scrutiny of the bill that comes before us. I've always been in favour of proper parliamentary scrutiny. Otherwise, you tend to end up with, you know, unintended mistakes. But then there's going to be this next issue, which is what is our future relationship then with the European Union going to look like? Will Welsh farmers be able to sell lamb in Europe without tariffs? You know, fundamental question for me. We will have to develop a policy around that. Yes, you're absolutely right. I suspect that won't really happen until we've got a new leadership team in place. I do think that it has to be a whole leadership team. And it can't just be members of the former shadow cabinet.
Well, John McDonnell's already said he's not going to be part of a new shadow cabinet. So you would think that if he leaves and Corbyn goes, you would think that would signal some kind of step change, wouldn't you?
Yes. And, the main thing I hope is that all the people of talent in the Parliamentary Labour Party will want to take part in the front bench, you know, in driving the Labour Party forward. You know, sometimes people say, oh, it's inevitable we'll now lose the next general election because we've got to win 123 seats to win and things look difficult in Scotland. I've written a few history books. I've never used the word inevitable because nothing ever is inevitable. It's just whether you choose to allow the likely to become inevitable.
But you are destined to sit on the sidelines for the next 5 years, probably, aren't you?
Well, yes, but there are clever things that we can do, and we can harry the government, we can harass them, we can intimidate them, we can be a bloody nuisance, and we can make sure that they don't get away with idiocies.
You're not going with Ian Blackford's sentiments yesterday, then? when he said everybody should be treating each other with respect.
Oh, yes, we should. We do it with respect, but I think we can still be a bloody nuisance.
Okay.
We should be. The country didn't give us the job of government, but it gave us the job of opposition, and we should do that better than we've done it for the last few years.
Okay. Chris Bryant, thank you very much indeed. Chris Bryant there, Labour MP, re-elected for the Rhondda, of course, says that he will harass and be a bloody nuisance to the government, but with respect, because they're not going to be able to do anything, the Labour Party, over the next 5 years. What on earth has become of them? What on earth has become of what used to be a very, very sort of credible political organisation? It is now a complete and utter mess, isn't it? 0344 499 1000. And actually, a useless opposition doesn't really help anyone, does it?
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Lots of you talking about the Whirlpool scandal as well, because we found out in the first hour how hopeless Whirlpool are being with this recall about Hotpoint washing machines and Indesit washing machines as well. Katie Grant from the iPaper told us that not only is the website down, but the telephone inquiry line is not working either. If you've been affected by this, we'd love to hear from you as well. You can tweet us, of course, at Talk Radio, at IROMG. Let's talk to Chris Hobbs now, though, because we've done this many times before, but it turns out that the number of migrants arriving in this country over the course of the last 12 months has reached almost 300 different events carrying something like 700 people. And we're told, and the local... So the local Dover MP has asked Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, to kind of clarify what it is that the money is being used for that's being sent over to France, supposedly to stop this kind of activity from going on. Chris, a very good morning to you. Welcome back.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
I mean, it just goes on and on, this, doesn't it? Last time you and I spoke about this, we said surely something has to change. The way that the French have to police their ports and their border must change, and we must change the policy that we have here as well. Otherwise, these people are just going to keep coming.
Well, that's right. And you probably have to say that the French police, who are doing
quite a lot over the other side in terms of breaking up camps, moving people on. Would much rather stand aside and let them come here because it's not a very popular posting. And I think their view, as I understand it, is that, of course, if the French have already got large numbers of migrants, refugees, call them what you will,
right,
that they're having to deal with who want to remain in France. Therefore, if people want to come to Britain, well, okay, where's the problem? But they are doing something. I mean, they do have boats out there. We have put money into them. We're probably paying for French police overtime and French police to be along the coast, an unpopular posting. But the traffickers seem to be holding sway. And as fast as they're arrested, of course, others reappear to take their place, and the problem is ongoing. I think the actual figure over the last few months is probably something approaching maybe even 2,000.
Is that right?
That have made their
way.
And
these people are all still here, as we said the last time we had this conversation, because, you know, we are not like the Australians were back in the days when they would basically tell the Afghan refugees who were coming on big boats to stay away from Australia, or else they're going to fire on them. You know, here what happens is we you know, and you might argue this is what we should be doing. I don't happen to agree. We should not be welcoming them with open arms and giving them houses and telling them they can stay.
I think part of the issue, as we probably said before, is that when they get here, they are processed. They're not sent straight back. And I think Boris did sort of allude to the fact that when he first took office, they'd be sent straight back.
Yeah.
But they're processed. And I suspect the ones that are sent back are the ones who've previously registered somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
But the ones that remain here are the ones who probably deliberately avoided being registered because they know that increases the chances of them being sent back. And then they go into the asylum process here, which, of course, means almost certainly being found lodging because there's not enough room in detention centres to house everyone who comes
in. And many of them will disappear into the sort of the background and nobody will see them again.
Yeah, that's right, that they will. But then, of course, if you talk to border force officers, they will also say this happens a lot at our borders where people come through, show their passports, perhaps with a visa, and still don't go back. because there is no automatic spew out, as it were, in terms of the systems, the antiquated systems we've got, that will tell border force or the Home Office when someone has overstayed their 6 months or whatever they're entitled to be here. So the problem is probably much greater than just the ones coming across the channel. We've got a general problem. And if we look at the lorries, Mike, you know, that awful incident up in Purfleet that we remember only too well, and people being discovered in Ireland, what we don't know is how many are actually getting in here that are never discovered.
Yes. But what we do know is, for example, that all of those people who died in the back of that lorry were from Vietnam, as it turns out. Many of them had paid an awful lot of money to people traffickers to get here, and they had come via a very sort of obscure route through Ukraine, possibly through Russia, and then into Eastern Europe. And, you know, they could then go, I suppose, in a variety of ways, either to Ireland or to the UK. And we just have to get better at somehow stopping it, don't we?
Well, we do, and it was interesting, wasn't it? A few weeks ago, there was criticism of the police saying they need to devote much more resources to dealing with the problem of human trafficking.
Mm.
And, of course, recently, in the last couple of days, we've had criticism of the police saying that they're not doing enough in terms of sexual offences, including rape. In fact, police have been accused of not doing enough in just about every field, I think. But it is very difficult to deal with human trafficking. The National Crime Agency take the lead on that. They have had some success, but as fast as they arrest traffickers, be it in cooperation with the French in France or in the UK, then others take their place. It really is a major problem that we have to face, and we haven't really, in all honesty, Mike, no matter what money we're pouring into it, because of austerity, because of the cuts, we haven't really got the resources to tackle it in the way it should.
Aren't we supposed to have some kind of border force? Whatever happened to that?
Well, bless them. I mean, I've got a lot of time for the border force because I used to work with them.
Mm.
They are recruiting more border force officers pre-Brexit, but there are issues of retention. Once people are recruited, but they seem to not to want to stay very long. And if you look at the last border force officer survey, the staff survey, which many of them refused to complete, But there is no confidence in senior Border Force officials at the Home Office or in government ministers. So, not surprisingly. So what you've got there is and their pay increases have been almost non-existent over the last few years. So you've got in the Border Force very low morale, but they do work hard. They work hard at Dover. A lot of them are in Calais, where they do, you know, that is fairly effective. But of course, that displaces the migrants, the asylum seekers. It displaces them to elsewhere.
Right.
And they're still along the coastline, and they're still being broken up. Some say, you look at the human rights groups, quite brutally by the French police, but they're not going away. They're still there, and they're still trying to get across.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the way to solve this is to stop the people trafficking. But I'm told that people trafficking is now more profitable than actually drug trafficking. So a lot of people are doing it, and it's not a nasty, it's not a nice lot of people that are doing it. It's a pretty nasty, organised crime-type gang which is doing it all.
That's right, and the estimates, really, what human smuggling is worth is between £3 and £6 billion a year.
Right.
So there is huge sums of money to be made. And, of course, the people that tend to be arrested are those at the bottom end of the ladder, the ones at the very top, the ones who are really creaming the money off. Of course, it's an international problem, and you need massive international cooperation to actually bring those people down. When you look at it, the investigations to bring the people at the top down will be incredibly complicated. And, of course, we await to see what happens in terms of cooperation, what happens in terms of the Brexit agreement.
Yeah. Well, we would surely be more within our rights to deport them back to France once we have left the European Union, because we'll no longer be in the same economic area, we'll no longer be in the same political arena. We will be a separate organisation, a separate country from France. And so, therefore, I would have thought you'd be able to much more easily send them back to France and say, sorry, that's where you live, that's where you, whether you registered there or not as a refugee, that's where you're going to stay.
You could be right there, Mike, but equally that could provoke a massive international incident with the French police standing, you know, how we send them back, be it by plane, be it by ferry, standing and saying, none, you're not coming in.
Yeah. Well, something drastic has to be done, or is this going to carry on, or will we have the same conversation this time next year, Chris?
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think the way that you're going to have to tackle it is really with cooperation. You need to increase the resources available to the police, the National Crime Agency. There needs to be better cooperation across Europe. And if we, after Brexit, we could lose access to Europol, to various European databases that are absolutely crucial, really, to us. So we could be in a worse position, and we really don't want to do that. We really need whatever happens post-Brexit. We really need that cooperation to continue and be enhanced and be much better than it is at the moment if we're going to get anywhere near cracking these trafficking gangs.
Sure. Chris, thank you very much indeed. Chris Hobbs there, former Met police officer and Border Patrol officer as well. I mean, you know, I can't keep having the same conversation with people. This is starting to annoy me now because we have to find a solution. Every time we talk about these migrants coming over in these boats, we get the same answers, the same questions, the same results. It's not good enough. Priti Patel needs to do something, and she needs to come up with some solution to this, which is better than the current one that we have. Because the current one that we have is that if you turn up in Dover on one of these boats, you get taken in, you get registered as a refugee, you get given some kind of lodging because you can't be held in a detention centre. If you are held in a detention centre, you're not held there for very long. And the only people who get deported back are those who have registered their residence as somewhere else in Europe. So if you haven't done that, they get to stay here, which is madness, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So name-calling is something that's been going on for a very long time indeed. Some names are now no longer usable. You can't call people things that will upset them. You can't call people things that will be racially discriminatory. You can't call people some really, really nasty, ghastly names if you're at work because you might well get sacked for it. But let's talk right now to Dr. Sonia Falk, who's psychology lecturer and psychotherapist, because there's been a suggestion that hate crime should be expanded so that many, many more things could become a hate crime. Dr. Sonia, very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. What's your sort of raison d'etre for all this? Do you think that there's more hate crime going on that should be classed as hate crime, or do you think that we should be making sure that we sort of shut down any kind of insults that people might use?
Well, I think it's really good for society to become more aware of individual differences between people that they get discriminated against for, and insults that have been legislated against in relation to individual differences to do with disability, age, race, sexuality have been legislated against. I would prefer a society where legislation is not needed.
Well, that would be nice. I was going to say you should have a look on Twitter once in a while and see what names people get called and what names I get called sometimes from out there.
Yes.
Because it's
not names I'm being called for what I'm saying today.
Well, there you go. But, I mean, is it really an insult to call somebody a nerd or a geek?
It depends on the way in which it is used, and that is what is made clear in, for example, the Equalities Act, the Public Orders Act. They are showing that when language is used with the intent to harass somebody or to set them apart in a way that is damaging for them, then that is language that should be legislated against.
Yes, and I think everybody would agree that there are certain words which we're not going to say, obviously, because they're not the sort of words that you can say on the radio, that you wouldn't say to somebody, and many of those words would result in you being prosecuted for some kind of hate crime of one kind or another. But I think people also are nervous of making too much of something like hate crime, because, I mean, I can't really imagine a situation where the word nerd or the word geek would be terribly offensive. I mean, people that I know who are maybe a bit geeky and a bit nerdy will actually say themselves, I'm a bit of a nerd.
Well, if you actually speak to people who have been bullied using those words, particularly growing up, then you get a different impression of what impact it's had on them. And I think people, this is something I'm really interested in, is that the very high IQ individuals in our society are a minority group, and they are very unrecognized. And people within that minority group themselves try to find ways of coping by making themselves invisible. And it's usually
people with very high IQs are usually very successful, aren't they?
Well, that is the paradox, because those who have had good support and have been able to be resilient and have found ways of channeling their abilities can be hugely successful. Mm. And that is why I think those who are discriminated against and bullied and who are not having their needs recognised and supported are very much ignored.
See, I think you've hit on the answer there. You talk about being resilient, and I think teaching people to be resilient is far better than punishing people for offending them. Do you know what I mean? Because then that way, if somebody's trying to be offensive to you and you have a resilient personality, then it doesn't matter, you know, because you can't be bullied effectively.
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. If you think of minority groups, ethnic minorities, sexuality, minorities.
Yes, but if you're resilient, if you're a resilient individual, what people say to you means absolutely nothing.
Sticks and stones will break my bones.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true, don't you?
No, I don't, because and there has been research that's really proven that. There was a study in the Lancet which showed that bullying by peers can produce more long-term anxiety, depression.
Oh, I agree with that. I'm not saying that bullying doesn't hurt people. What I'm saying is if you teach people to be unaffected by it, by being resilient and by not being victimized by it, they can triumph over the bullies, and the bullies will give up. And that would be my kind of, you know, way of facing up to bullies.
Well, I think helping people to learn how to cope with being bullied is an important intervention, but I also think making society more aware of the impact of bullying and teaching the values of not bullying people who stand out as being different are surely values that we as a society would want to promote.
Well, that does go on, but it doesn't help people not to be bullied, you see. That's my problem, is that if you say to people bullying is wrong, many of them won't stop doing it. They'll continue to do it because they feel that they can pick on people, and they usually pick on weaker people. They usually pick on people that they know they can bully. Whereas if you can teach resilience, and I'm sorry to keep repeating this, but if you can teach resilience, then the bullies have nobody to bully. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it would be good if that is how it worked, but unfortunately that's not the way it works. And even when you mentioned now that there's some words that wouldn't be able to be said on radio, that is because of activism around language and harassment and hate crime, which has changed society's views of what kind of language
but that's is acceptable. But that's exactly my point. It hasn't, because people still use that language. I just can't use it on the radio. That doesn't mean that the people are not using it on the outside world, because people are.
But the there point are lots is, of areas where they wouldn't use it anymore because they have recognised...
Well, if it's all working so well, how come there's so much hate crime going on? Because we're now registering more hate crime than ever.
Well, there's an attempt to respond to that, and I think that's what people do with trying to bring about social movements against these sorts of discriminatory behaviours, is recognising what a problem it is and then trying to find ways of responding. And I think it's important to talk about this.
It is. It is important. But it's also important not to include too many things which then kind of dilute the message, if you like. And people on Twitter at the moment are reacting to what you're saying by saying, actually, if you put words like nerd and geek into hate crime, then suddenly you're diluting the really serious hate crime when people call each other names which are homophobic or call each other names which are in some way racist.
Well, what you're saying there is showing a view that certain ways of taunting people are less acceptable or more acceptable than other ways.
That's a fact, isn't it?
Well, that's something I'm calling into question.
Well, you don't think people should be allowed to taunt one another? I mean, that's what British people do all the time. We are constantly making fun of each other. We are constantly taking the mickey out of each other, and sometimes that involves taunting.
Well, the way you're talking about it is as though it's quite harmless and fun.
Well, because it is. Yeah, that's because
well,
it is.
Well, a lot of it isn't, and I think that's where
well,
the problem
some
lies.
Some of it isn't, right? And I think you're confusing the serious stuff with the non-serious stuff. And I think that's dangerous, because then you create people's willingness to do it without thinking that it's different. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I think if you work clinically with individuals who have been discriminated against for having very high IQ, you see what the effects on them are.
I work with lots of people with high IQs, and they seem perfectly fine to me.
Well, probably because you've met the ones who are thriving, of which there are many.
I don't think you're going to get much sympathy for having a minority group of people with high IQs, to be honest.
Well, I think it's hard for people to be compassionate towards a group of people who, some of whom are outstanding and do very well. But that's the kind of tip of the iceberg. There are many who are not doing well at all. Our schools, for example, in the UK, in the state system, do not recognise children who are most able, and they don't have generic routines for how to support the needs of children like that, and children who are not being supported in their needs really do suffer at school. So, for example...
Well, lots of children suffer at school, and that's how you become resilient, isn't it? Don't you, as a parent, don't you teach your children to be resilient?
Well, if you think at the other end of the spectrum, children who have learning disabilities, people don't say to them, well, just be resilient, and it doesn't matter.
Well, actually,
if you taught them special needs education.
Well, yeah, but if you taught them to be resilient, they wouldn't need special needs education, would they?
That's not true, because a person who cannot cope with the way that the general education level is pitched is not going to get through that just by being taught to
be resilient. There's a very wide spectrum of people who get special needs education, and you can't lump them all in as one. That's for a start.
No, I don't lump them all
you
in
just
as
did.
Well.
You said that you just said that being resilient wouldn't help them. It would help quite a lot of them.
Well, what I'm saying is that individuals with very high IQ tend not to be recognised as a group that have special needs, who do need adjustments made in the services that are provided, and that
so you want to have a special category for people who are nerds, in other words.
I think recognising individuals with very high IQ and how that affects them and how that makes them different from the majority is something really important to be recognised, and that I would be very much in support of finding ways to understand that and have compassion towards that.
Do you consider yourself to be a high IQ individual?
I am classified as a high IQ individual, yes.
Who by?
Who by?
Yeah.
Oh, just by standardised intelligence tests.
I see.
Anybody takes a standardised intelligence test.
And do you feel as though you've had a rough life because of the fact that you're high IQ?
Well, I have had my own personal experiences of different kinds, just as anybody has. But what I'm talking about is not my personal experience. I'm talking about research.
No, but you must be using your own personal experience as well.
Well, any researcher comes into their research because of some personal interest, and so that is true of anybody who researches anything. But it's not just the individual experience that makes it important to think about. It is the number of people and the number of research projects and books that have been written about this sort of thing, and that's why I think it's really important to think about it.
Okay. Well, good luck with it, because I'm not sure you've convinced anybody listening, I'm afraid. Dr. Sonia Falk there talking about high IQ individuals and how they should be a minority and how you shouldn't be mean to them and you shouldn't call them nerds or geeks, even if they want you to. Okay? Got that? 0344-499-1000 is the number. This is Talk Radio.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
The whole damn world is just
We're giving you the chance to win £1,000 in time for Christmas on Talk Radio's new £1,000 Thursday competition. Imagine what you could do with a grand. To begin with a chance of winning the cash, correctly answer the following question and enter into the prize draw. We must receive your entry before 6 p.m. tomorrow. The question is this: who is the older of these two celebrity chefs? Is it A, Jamie Oliver, or B, Gordon Ramsay? Text the word WIN followed by your answer, either A or B, to 85544. That's 85544. Text messages will be charged at £1.50 plus your standard network rate. And of course, you can enter as well at talkradio.co.uk. Entries must be received before the lines close at 6 p.m. tomorrow. That's Thursday, December the 19th. Terms and conditions and competition rules apply. See talkradio.co.uk for details. And if you've missed any of the shows this week so far, don't forget there's a podcast that comes out every single day that you can get your hands on, usually mid-afternoon. And we'll be doing that, of course, all the way through until Friday of this week. We're going to go back to the phones in a moment, 0344 499 1000. Let's talk to Tony, who's in Nottingham and wants to talk about hate crime. Hello, Tony.
Hello, are you all right?
Very well, sir. What do you want to say?
I just think I'm an ex-police officer, so I know a little bit about this. And
okay.
I think the main problem is it's all based on perception.
Mm.
So an example I could give, if we had an argument in the street, and for whatever reason, just sort of picking any sort of random word, I called you a hot dog or something like that, something weird.
Okay.
And you perceived that as being hateful for whatever reason, like, be it homophobic or racist or anything.
Yeah.
And the incident ended up being reported to the police, because I don't know, was it like a road rage incident or whatever. If you perceive that as being hateful, it is then primed as such. So that, you know, hate, and every time you have any incident, and what used to really get on my nerves was usually taxi incidents. The response, people know the response is going to get a better response if they can sort of say, oh, yeah, oh, by the way, he said this to me. And,
yeah.
And I, do you know what I mean? And that's why...
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I'll give you two examples. Right? I was a victim of this when I was out with my daughter and her boyfriend a couple of years ago. We were at a bar in Camden. And I was messing about, playing pool, this, that and the other. We got into a bit of an argument with some people who were trying to take over the table. And they happened to be Asian. And one of them went over to the bouncer and said I'd called him a racial name, which I hadn't done at all. And fortunately, yeah. We were able to clear it up. But at one point or other, they were going to throw me out for being racist, right? And I was like, well, I didn't say that, so it's absolute rubbish. And the second one I'd tell you about is up in Scotland, when I was working up there, there was a fight outside a bar. And during the process of the fight, one of the Scottish guy called the English guy, he used the B word, but he called him an English B, right? And
yeah.
So the police had to register it as a hate crime.
Yeah, well, and that's the case. That's happening all day in, day out. And so if you are in taking a statement from anybody about any crime or whatever, you go through a series of sort of generic questions. Some of those will be, and did you perceive this as being hateful or did you perceive offence from it? So it's all about perception. So if you're
yes.
sort of living in a world where everything, more and more now, geeks and nerds are
right.
a protected species or whatever... and it used to be, we had a big drive with emos. That was a new sort of group of people that were, another strand of diversity.
Yes, but they call themselves that, right? So I don't understand how that becomes then in any way an insult. When you were a police officer, Tony, were you were encouraged to ask these questions, presumably?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And even if it's not a crime, even if it's something's not a crime, so say there's two people talking on a bus. And they're saying something like, for example, I don't think that a biological man who suddenly says he's a woman is a woman.
Yeah.
And a third party were to overhear that, they could phone that into the police and it would be crime. It'd be recorded as a hate incident.
Right.
And that's all factored in. So in a sort of environment where everything is becoming or can be perceived as hateful, it's no wonder that hate... crime is going through
yes.
the roof.
Well, of course it is, because there's a crime that was created for people to report people on, which previously didn't exist. So it's always
exactly.
bound to only go in one direction, isn't it?
Exactly, more and more. And this it's all this sort of like endless nonsense, I think, is, just one of the reasons why Labour's gone so catastrophically wrong, because
yes.
they've relied on that so much.
And nobody in the real world actually thinks that way.
Not at all. They might as well be talking a different language, because it's just farcical and it's just comical.
I know. Well, listen, great call, Tony. Thank you very much indeed. Let's talk to Chris, who is in Leicestershire. Hello, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. What can I do for you?
Well, I just stumbled onto your station just as the lady was talking about this geek.
Welcome.
Thing.
It's not always this ridiculous, I have to tell you.
Oh, it was mad. I don't often scream at the radio, but I was doing that. You know, from my own background, I was listening to this woman and saying how people with high IQs and geeks are called geeks and nerds
right.
should be looked after and protected.
I know.
And it should be recorded as a hate crime. Now, my own background, I was top stream at school. I went to a comprehensive GASP school. And I was top stream, did my O-levels, shows my age, A-levels, went to university. I've got a PhD in medical biochemistry, and I work for a government agency company.
Right.
So you would consider yourself
a high IQ individual, then?
I consider myself a high IQ individual. I was called a geek and a nerd at school.
Right.
Back in the early mid-80s.
Right.
I just thought... Yeah, I'm a geek and a nerd, so what? You know, and
you're a very successful geek and a nerd, if I may say so.
Yeah, I like to think I am, and it doesn't bother me. I'm a geek, you know. Do you remember there was that incident a little while ago where Boris Johnson called someone a girly swat?
That's
and
right, yeah.
Everybody's wearing... You saw Steph McGovern wearing that top,
yeah.
girly
and then she,
swat.
And then she mentioned it again when she had to hand over to him at some ceremony or other, and it became a thing, you know, and he was then labelled as some kind of ghastly, dreadful misogynist.
Yeah, but she took that and turned it into something positive, which was, what's wrong with being a girly swat?
Yeah.
And it's the same here. What's wrong with being called a geek or a nerd?
But this is what I was saying about resilience. You know, you teach your own kids, if you have them, you know, how to put up with that sort of nonsense. Because what you... I realise that a lot of people don't have those tools and a lot of people do get bullied, and I accept that. But you're not going to stop those people from getting bullied by now putting more people into the place where they can be bullied instead of telling them to be resilient and to fight back.
No, exactly. I mean, I was told when I was a kid, you know, oh, you're being called a geek and a nerd. Well, that's because that's what you are. You are a clever person. You know, as my dad said, grow a pair.
And the people that called you those names are probably working in the local McDonald's.
I'll tell you something. We had a school reunion and, some of them were working. You know, these are the people that bullied me, made my life a bit of a misery when I was at school, and are now sitting there looking at me going, OK... You know, one of them stood there next to me and said, I always knew you'd do all right, Chris. It's like, yeah, you didn't.
There is a delicious irony to all of that. But you're quite right, Chris. Listen, I hope you stay. Thank you for stumbling onto us at Talk Radio. We do love new listeners. We do love new callers. And we talk to an awful lot of people now, more than we used to, because we are the fastest growing radio station in the world. If you haven't seen it, by the way, my top 20 planks or top 100 planks list is now a video. And you can go and watch it on the Twitter feed that we have here at Talk Radio. And it's going to be on Facebook shortly as well. Let's talk to Ken, who's in Luton. Hello, Ken.
Morning, Mike.
Morning, sir. Well, it's afternoon, actually, now. We've been waiting so long for somebody else to run for the head of the Labour Party. We've now got Emily Thornberry joining the race.
Oh, well, if her or Keir Starmer or Yvette Cooper are picked as a Labour Party, they will be in the wilderness for another 20 years.
I think you're absolutely right. I can't see them getting anywhere in 10, no matter who they find.
Well, last year I rang you after they had their conference.
Yes.
When they ditched, oh, we're going to honour the referendum to, oh, we're going to have a second people's vote.
Yeah.
Because Keir Starmer and Eleanor Thornberry wanted it. So he done that. So, and then there's Yvette Cooper, who come on this morning, Mike. I could not believe it. On Radio 4.
Yeah.
She's still saying, oh, we can't live without a deal. Well, she was been saying that for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, also, what about Jeremy Corbyn whipping the Labour MPs to vote against the deal on Friday? I mean, have they learnt nothing, these people?
No, that's what I say. I mean, she had a majority of 26,000 when her constituents voted leave.
Yeah.
She got through by 1,200 this week because the Brexit Party got 8,000 and the Tories got 14,000.
Yeah.
She'd have been ousted if one of them two had stood up off.
Yeah, it's like that. I'm going to convert the old joke about millionaires. You know, how do you start with? How do you get a small majority as a Labour MP? Start with a large one.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because they're all going backwards.
Nothing.
It's absolutely incredible, isn't it? Ken, thanks for your call. Lots more of you wanted to get on. We can't really get many more of you on because we are literally out of time. I'm sorry to tell you. But coming up, you are going to have the delights of Ian Collins and Kevin O'Sullivan, fresh from their Christmas dinner. No doubt they'll be explaining to you why they've had their Christmas dinner so early, because I haven't had a Christmas dinner yet. I'm having my Christmas dinner at Christmas. That's when I have it. That's why it's called Christmas dinner. 0344 499 1000. With apologies, we shall be back tomorrow from 10 o'clock. We'll be bringing you, obviously, the Queen's speech, which will be happening at some point during the course of the day. I'm not sure if we're going to be down in the tent in Westminster, but I don't think we are. There's people shaking their heads behind the glass, and they are, of course, all people with very high IQs because they've been examined before they were able to come and work here. And as I've said to you, we're only now going to talk to people with high IQs because, obviously, they are the people who are the most vulnerable in society. Are they not? This is Talk Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.